Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to your first in a very long time edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio. I am your host, Greg, and we are finally back from our long hibernation. The holidays, some personal issues, they all happened, but we are back, and so are Spurs. And that order is probably wrong, but who cares? We're here to talk about Tottenham Hotspur, and we're glad to have you back to listen to us. I am joined by two out of our three regular panelists today. Michael is somewhere on the L train. Please pray for him, because I'm sure the MTA is not going to get him home safely. But we do have our Wheeler Dealer Radio sidekick with us. It is Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you doing today?
Hey, everybody. I'm good. Doing good. We had a snow day here in Atlanta. It's our second one of the season already, and we have another one tomorrow. So, you know, global warming's a lie. Things have been great.
Brian, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing today?
As always, nice and toasty down here in South Florida.
Oh, that's just delightful. Florida man, Brian Ashlock. Okay, so guys, I think we're going to cover every Spurs game since we last did a podcast. Let's get started. Watford 1-1. Brian, what was the most important thing about this game?
That we did not win.
Okay, there you go. Okay, we're not actually going to talk about every game because it's been like a month. So let's talk about the most recent Spurs game. Actually, no, I want to talk about the most important thing about Tottenham Hotspur right now, which is not the game against Everton. It is the fact that all of our Belgians are apparently very interested in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. Ben, do you think this interest in Bitcoin makes it more or less likely that we're going to hold on to Toby?
Yeah, I mean, Toby seems like the only one who hasn't put his life savings into Bitcoin.
Well, that we know about.
Right. I mean, Dembele looks fucked. I think, you know, at this time in his career, he's really injury prone. You know, he needs a desperate last paycheck, or, I mean, he's not going to have a great post-professional career.
Do you think Daniel Levy will sign off on a blockchain?
Don't even know what that means.
Me neither.
Like, that just sounds like gibberish. But sure, why not?
Well, Moussa Dembélé bought a haunted house, apparently, or a haunted mansion or hotel with what I'm going to presume is bitcoins, which I guess means the three things you can buy with bitcoins are prostitutes, drugs, and apparently haunted properties. So,
what about vintage pornography?
I believe that is just an interest of people who have lots of bitcoins. I don't think
I was
actually
unclear on how that story went. I apologize.
No worries, Brian. Do you think this interest in cryptocurrency harbors a Belgian exodus from Tottenham Hotspur to presumably a team in, I don't know, Eastern Europe or China?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. I mean, I'm really worried about the, you know, impact on global warming that our reliance on cryptocurrency is having. You know, we as a club are trying to be, you know, more green and more conscious of what we're doing in the Tottenham area. And, you know, Moussa Dembélé with all his blockchaining and mining and shit is really just harming the environment. I think that's how it works. That's what I know about Bitcoin.
I think you're right. I don't know what a blockchain is either, but I'm going to guess Moussa Dembélé is really good at it. Right?
Yeah, I mean, if it involves holding on to bitcoins and spinning and then progressing them down the line, I imagine that, yeah, he's very good at that. I think I saw something the other day, Kodak is involved in bitcoins. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I think they built like a bitcoin mining device. I don't know why you wouldn't just use a computer. This whole world is nonsense.
Sherpy's going to be able to tell us about this momentarily. So
calling it mining is just really, because it implies that there's a level of effort that you as the Bitcoin holder are putting in.
Do we think Bitcoin is going to be a stadium sponsor?
I hope so. I mean, I think we should need to issue our own coin. I think that's the future, and I think that's what Daniel Levy's been focused on so much, and that's why we don't have any real links for January, because he's not worried about transfers. He's building a Hotspur coin that is about to be issued.
That's how we're going to be able to afford top-tier transfers with Hotspur coin.
I'm mostly concerned about if we're going to do the weird stuff at the beginning of the show, what's the end of the show going to be like?
Brian, it's a whole new year. Who knows what the end of the show is going to be? Blockchains, that's what it's going to be.
Up is down, left is right. Cryptocurrency is up, it's down. I don't know what to do.
I'm clearly buy gold from Glenn Beck. Is that too dated a reference? Probably that's too dated a reference. Okay, let's talk about some actual football before we get back to blockchains later. This is now a blockchain podcast. I want to be clear with everyone. This is just a podcast about blockchains and the Belgians who love them.
Blockchain Dealer Radio.
Wheeler Dealer Blockchain.
That's better. That's better. Good.
I try. Thank you. I appreciate that. Ben, do you have any other blockchain thoughts before we get on to Everton? Do you want to share any,
I'm still frantically Googling what a blockchain is, and I'll be with you in about 20 minutes, I think, once I do some more reading.
I think that's going to put you on the, like, radar of, like, three government agencies, so you might want to be careful about that. But anyway, let's talk about some football, because that's presumably what the people who have stuck with us this far are here to listen to.
Seems unlikely.
I mean, they pretty much know what we are at this point. Spurs beat the living daylights out of Everton this past weekend, 4-0. Really, really thorough destruction of Everton. Everton has been pretty bad lately, which is really fun because I don't like Big Sam very much. But I think I don't think there's a lot of negatives to take away from this game, so I think it's really worth focusing on where Spurs are now and what this game says about them. And I think what I would like to lead with is, if Harry Kane is our most important player, Ben, at this point in the season, is Heung-min Son our second most important player?
I think that's a tough one. I mean, the form that he's been in, I think you could definitely make the case that Heung-min Son is at least our second best player. But the reality is, you know, we have seen this team function pretty well without him. We still, and I know I'm always banging the drum for Christian Eriksen, but the fact remains is he remains our most irreplaceable player. And until we see more from Eric Lamella in a creative role, you know, it's still Eriksen for me.
Well, Eric Lamella is the most important player on Wheeler Dealer Radio, not Tottenham Hotspur.
Obviously. I mean, he might be the most important player on Tottenham Hotspur. Without him, you know, to play for, you know, like one of those Make-A-Wish kids, you know, I don't think we would have been in the place that we are today.
And his blockchains are essential for the team's success.
Just throw that in there. Just make sure.
I think we're going to kill a bit in record time tonight. I'm pretty excited about it, guys. No, I mean, I just think what we're seeing out of Son, this is not maybe the best comparison, but this isn't like Nasser Chadli in a rich vein of finishing form. I think you're right that Eriksen at the end of the day is probably our most irreplaceable player, and what he does on the team in terms of the way he affects everything might be, I don't know, at his best, sort of the broadest. I think the way Son's playing this year is affected. I think this is more than just a rich vein of form out of Son. I think he's changing the way Spurs play. I think he's made our attack a lot more dynamic. I think he's affecting the way Poch is setting up our whole team. Do you think he's having that deep an impact, or do you think it's just he's doing what he's always done, but he's doing it a lot better than he has been before?
No, I mean, I think, you know, he started the season a little slowly, but since I don't know what the time frame is, but over the last, you know, 6-7 games over the Christmas period, I mean, he has really been fantastic, and it's gotten to the point where he's undroppable. And, you know, he's scoring at ridiculous rates. He's creating for other players. You know, he brings something different that nobody else has in his ability to run with the ball and beat a man, you know, while also having the finishing abilities of guys like Dele or Harry Kane. And I think this year we've seen him create for his teammates a lot more than we had in years past. And so everything seems to be coming together for Son right at a time that we desperately needed it. So, I mean, he's been fantastic, and I think you really have a question, and maybe now's not the time to talk about this, but, you know, Toby Alderweireld is coming back, and it's going to mean we're able to field a back three again for the first time in a long time, and the form of Heung-Min Son kind of makes it a question of, can we go back to that, or should we go back to that, because, you know, who do you leave out? And you certainly can't leave out the guy who's been our fourth-choice attacker for so long, who's now, you know, I would say the first name on the team sheet behind Harry Kane and Christian Eriksen.
So Brian, Brian, what do you do with this dilemma? Are you just going to rotate Sanchez and Vertonghen and work Alderweireld into the back four that we have going now? Do you go back to a back three? And if so, who would you sort of shift out for to make sure Son stays in the team and keep Toby in as well?
Well, I mean, one of the benefits of the squad that we have is that we have a lot of flexibility with what we can do and with who we're playing. So if it's, you know, if it's playing a back three, then we can drop Dyer and we can play a midfield that's, you know, Wanyama and Eriksen, or Dembele and Eriksen, or we can play Dyer and Eriksen and then still play Dele Alli and Heung-Min Son across the attacking band. You know, honestly, if I'm in charge, though, I'm sticking with the four at the back. I'm still playing the 4-2-3-1, and I'm just going to play Alderweireld and Vertonghen and, you know, rotate in Sanchez as needed, or put him in, you know, as a third center back late in games when we're, you know, just trying to hold on to the ball and kill stuff off. You know, I think the 4-2-3-1 is definitely our best formation. You know, the switching to three at the back worked great last year. That was, you know, fun, but I mean, it's three at the back is weirdly kind of dying out again. Like, it was just like a really quick fad and now it's gone. But I mean, the way we played against Everton, the way we've played the last few, you know, three or four matches with the four at the back, I don't know how you can go away from it right now.
Ben, do you think that the back three was a fad? It does seem to be dying out in the Premier League. It's not being used in the way it was. I mean, Arsenal's doing their weird sort of back three thing occasionally, but a few other teams are still using it. But it's not what it was even earlier in the year. But we did play, even this year, very well with a back three. I mean,
it's really weird. Like, I think last year, I want to say 17 out of 20 teams played a back three at some point. And as of this moment in time, Chelsea, Arsenal, and West Ham are the only teams that are regularly using one.
Now, some of that's down to, I don't think Spurs would have moved away from it if Toby hadn't gotten hurt.
No, it's certainly possible. And, you know, Man City suffered an injury early on that maybe, you know, changed their way of thinking, and then they decided that they were fine without it. But it is interesting how quickly a lot of teams adopted it, or at least experimented with it, and now it's been pretty much jettisoned by everybody. The teams who are sticking with it, Arsenal and Chelsea, are in a real rocky run of form right now. So it'll be interesting to see how much longer that they persist with these formations.
And any success Arsenal's had with the back three has always felt a little coincidental as opposed to a direct result of it. So,
well, and the benefit for Spurs if you're playing the back four is if you're playing Dyer in midfield, he can essentially drop back into that back line when we're in possession, whether he's splitting the defender or the center backs, or if he's dropping off to the right of them to cover the right fullback channel. And it essentially can look like a back three. You know, so I mean, we have so much versatility in the midfield and with the defenders that, you know, if Pochettino doesn't stick to one or commit to one, we're fine because we have options.
Ben, do you have any other further back three thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, you know, as ever, we have a lot of games. We have a lot of rotation that happens. It's nice to have multiple different setups, multiple different looks that we can use as needed. I'm sure we haven't seen the last of the back three, whatever happens. But, you know, I think it's probably not going to be plan A, given that, you know, Dele Alli is rounding into form after a rough start to the season. Heung-Min Son's being amazing. Harry Kane is, you know, as good as he's ever been, if not better. Christian Eriksen, still Christian Eriksen. I think the only way we can make that work is if we turn Eriksen into a central midfielder, like Brian suggested. But, you know, we haven't really seen a lot of that to give me great confidence that we'll do it. But I'd be open to it if we did.
Do you remember when we spent like 8 months complaining about how Pochettino wouldn't like change things up?
Yeah.
It feels like a long time.
It's been a wild ride.
Yeah. It's been a long time. I think this is the point in the podcast where we talk about how extremely good Harry Kane is. He just set the record for Tottenham's lead all-time Premier League scorer, which is like kind of an arbitrary distinction. We should point out it only goes back about 20-some years, but considering the speed with which he did it compared to Sheringham and Defoe, it's really impressive. And I don't know. I don't have any questions, but Brian, you want to talk about how good Harry Kane is? Like, I just feel like we should appreciate him while we can.
I mean, he's a better version of Darren Fletcher. So, no.
You were right. You were right the whole time.
Stephen Fletcher.
No, yeah. I mean, he's a better version of Darren Fletcher, too, really.
I don't know. We haven't seen him as a, you know, ankle-biting defensive midfielder.
I mean,
there's some holes in his game.
we know he's got a good keeper. So
I'm still comfortable with my assertion. I'm comfortable with what I said. No, I mean, it's amazing because you look at the names that are on that list, and Sheringham probably predated all of our times as Spurs fans. But, you know, he's obviously a name that we're all familiar with. The names on there that I'm familiar with on that list there are obviously Defoe and Keane. And there were years there where it felt like those two guys just scored, you know, 20 goals a season, and they were amazing. And Jermaine Defoe had, you know, such a long career at the club, and, you know, leaving and coming back. And he was awesome, and he's still one of my favorite Spurs players. And Harry Kane just kind of blew them all out of the water. Like, you know, I don't remember offhand, like, what the number of matches was, but it was, I mean,
he did set it in, like, 100 less than Sheringham did.
Yeah. And you know, I never cease to be amazed by the numbers and the records that Kane puts up. You know, like, it feels like every week, you know, he becomes the fastest Spurs player to such and such a mark. Or, you know, when it was in December, it was, you know, most goals in a calendar year, and it was, you know, just
so
everything.
Here we go. We got Kane's got 98 goals. It took him 135 games. Teddy Sheringham had 97 and 236. Defoe had 91 and 276. And Keane had 91 and 238. That is completely ridiculous.
And it's even more ridiculous when you think back to, you know, especially the years when, you know, the three of us were, you know, becoming Spurs fans, and you know, our early kind of struggles to get into the Champions League, and then, you know, finally getting there, is we're always holding out for, you know, a world-class striker. And every summer it was, what were we going to do to buy a world-class striker? Who were we going to buy? Were we going to get Leandro Daimiel? Were we going to get Klaas-Jan Huntelaar? Were we going to get, you know, all these other strikers?
Fernando Llorente.
Yeah, I mean,
hey, we did it, guys.
We got him. You know, like, and then, you know, the whole time we had Harry Kane just kind of sitting around biding his time, and now we have, I don't, probably the best out and out striker in the world. I mean, maybe.
I think it's hard to argue for anyone else, at least at this moment in time.
Maybe you take Lewandowski. Maybe.
I mean, who's in that conversation? Like Suarez, Aguero, Lewandowski, Kane. I mean, I think that's
one of the guys in Italy, like Icardi. Maybe.
Oh, it's Italy. Come on, that doesn't count.
Higuain.
That doesn't count. Not anymore. I don't think he's in that class.
But I mean, you know, I, like you said, you could certainly make an argument that Kane is better than all those guys, and it's weird, and it's
well. Here's the
awesome.
Here's the weird thing to me. This is an evergreen conversation. We could have it like at any point this season. But I was when Kane scored those goals this weekend, all I could think is like, if you went back in time, like just 2 or 3 years ago, and told me like, yeah, Gareth Bale is going to be, like, not just in your lifetime, but in, like, the next 5 years, like, he won't even be the best Tottenham player you'll watch, or your favorite Tottenham player, and there's going to be a guy who is way better and way more important to the club and way more productive than Gareth Bale, I would have thought you were out of your mind. Or Luka Modric, either of them. And now we have Harry Kane. It is it's just, I don't know. He's amazing. And as Ben is fond of saying, he's never going to leave us. And it's great.
Yeah, I don't know why you guys are enjoy it while we can, you know.
We'll, I don't even know why, it's like a reflex. Every time Kane, I don't know why, but like Kane scored these goals and like the immediate story was like, can Tottenham hold on to Harry Kane? And God knows this podcast is guilty of like talking about being worried about how worried we are that our good players are going to leave. But I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's incredible.
Can I take a digression real quick?
Yeah.
Like, sorry. All that fucking can Spurs hold on to their players nonsense. Like, in this very transfer window, we've seen Coutinho dip out on Liverpool to go to Barcelona. Alexis Sanchez is leaving Arsenal. Mesut Ozil's not far behind. Like, all of these other teams are shedding their best players while Spurs are still humming along. And Harry Kane is still there. And there's not a whisper of him going anywhere. And everybody keeps talking about Spurs. Like we're the ones with the problem. Like, fuck all y'all.
Yeah, pretty much.
And when we're paying our players in bitcoins next year, we're going to blockchain... I'm so sorry. Let's move on. I
really feel like that might be a good way to save the club money if we start paying players in bitcoins. Like, we just got to agree to the contracts when Bitcoin is high. And then hope it tanks.
It would save us a lot of money if we could pay our players in imaginary currency that doesn't exist and doesn't mean anything. And Daniel Levy could just have a room with, like, I don't know, cash registers or whatever the hell those mining machines are called, and just like,
yeah. How's Michelle Vorm going to buy PlayStation 4s and copies of Call of Duty now?
Ben, do you have any final thoughts on Harry Kane or blockchains before we move on?
He's good at soccer.
It's football.
He's okay at football.
He's okay. Well, yeah.
No Tom Brady.
He is in his TB12 frictionless pajamas that he has surely been scammed out of.
It's so weird. What are the odds? No, go ahead. Yours is going to be better, I'm sure.
Oh, I was going to say. What are the odds of the only other club Harry Kane plays for is in the NFL as a kicker at the end of his career?
Yeah, high. Very high.
Extremely high. Well, you got to feel like New England Revolution feel like they got a leg up if Kane ever wants to come to MLS like late when he's like 42 and on one leg. Because he'll be like, Tom Brady will love that. Got to go see Tom.
I don't think Tom Brady knows what soccer is.
I think you're absolutely right. Tom Brady doesn't know what soccer is.
I mean, he's married to a European person.
She's Brazilian.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I think she's German. Who's the one that's German? It's the other one.
Heidi Klum.
There are other yep. women.
Heidi Klum.
Okay, all right. Good work. Good work. Okay, I think the other performance that I really wanted to highlight, because Ben, you were sort of banging on about this both in our Slack and on our Twitter, and I think it's worth pointing out, is Serge Aurier, who has not been as, I don't know, I don't want to say as good as advertised, because certainly people like Brian were talking about his propensity to do dumb shit, and we've certainly seen that on display this year. He's had a bit of a rocky start at Spurs, not accounting for his off-the-field issues, but, I mean, you know, he seemed to behave since he got to Spurs, but it seems like he's rounding into a bit of a form. Am I right, Ben?
Yeah, I think, you know, the past few matches at least, he has looked increasingly confident and increasingly comfortable in his role. And I think it seems to be that Pochettino has finally anointed him as our first choice right back ahead of Kieran Trippier. I thought he had a great game against Everton. You know, it helps when nobody is attacking on the opposition side and Kjelpe Sigurdsson decides to spend 90 minutes not playing any defense.
I mean, that's surely something Spurs could have game planned for. I mean, we have seen that ourselves many times.
Right. If anyone was positioned to take advantage of Gilfie's lack of defensive awareness, it was us.
Or effort.
Yeah. But I mean, he spent, you know, so much of the match in tons of space, you know, high up the pitch. And, you know, we got him the ball frequently. He was involved in, you know, he made the first goal. He was involved in the last goal very heavily, I thought. You know, he kind of turned that passing around between everybody in our team into an actual dangerous attack pretty single-handedly. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to have a right back or any fullback with pace, with the ability to beat a man, with the ability to, you know, get up and down the pitch that way, that we haven't really had this season with Rose being constantly injured and Kyle Walker being a snake.
I mean, this isn't, in terms of his on-the-field performance, this isn't that surprising. I mean, we've said it over and over on this podcast. We have a lot of faith in Pochettino's ability to whip a fullback into shape. And, I mean, whatever else, I guess, Brian, I mean, this is a good question for you, because whatever else we've said about Serge Aurier, I mean, the guy certainly has tools to be a Champions League caliber fullback. He's not Kyle Walker, but, I mean, he's fast. He's got some technical ability. It's just his propensity to do sort of dumb shit. And, I mean, you combine the fact that this guy was out of... he hadn't played a competitive football match in a long time before he got here. He didn't have a preseason with us either. And, I mean, I guess it would make sense that give it a few months and Pochettino is going to have this guy, you know, better than Kieran Trippier, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was at PSG. Like, he was playing in the Champions League. Like, he's not... He's not out of his depth by any means. And, you know, like you said, he has all the tools. To me, it was just always a question of how focused was he? How interested was he going to be, you know, in a Saturday match away at like,
Everton?
You know, Crystal Palace or Bournemouth or, you know, whatever. So, you know, he could always get up for the big matches. Like, you know, that's the one thing that I will say about Serge Aurier is in the time that I saw him at PSG, I don't think I saw him have, like, nightmare games in many big matches. The ones that were bad were, you know, a French Cup match against, you know, Troyes, or, you know, on the road at Bastia when, you know, it didn't matter because PSG were already, you know, up 3-0. So, you know, that's still a concern that I have about him. It hasn't reared its head yet because, you know, he's just getting into it. And maybe this is something that Pochettino can work out of. Maybe Pochettino can work on his focus and his, you know, his application of his skills to the game. I mean, that's certainly something that Pochettino has always talked about with the club in general, is instilling the right mindset, instilling, you know, the need to work hard and the need to always be focused on the task at hand and that sort of thing. So, you know, maybe that's something that he's kind of browbeat out of Aurier. I don't know if, you know, 5 or 6 months is enough time to do that, but, you know, for now it's going well, and I'm just hopeful it stays that way.
All right. Well, speaking of additions to the squad, we have some transfer news to talk about. We're recording this just for frame of reference. We're recording this Wednesday night in America, obviously. And our first bit of actual player who could make a real impact on our current first team, our first link to a player like that, has just emerged. L'Equipe has said that Tottenham are having active discussions with PSG about Lucas Moura. Brian, let's start off, because obviously you know more about the French league than anyone else here. How reliable is L'Equipe as a source, just to frame this conversation?
It's fine. Like, I don't know. They're tabloidy-ish. They're usually, depending on who's doing the reporting, they're usually all right on PSG and on some of the other big clubs. But without knowing who the actual reporter on this specific rumor is, I don't know, but they're okay.
So like the Telegraph would be a good.
Probably. Right, like it's not like the BBC or, you know, whatever, but the Telegraph's probably reasonable.
So let's talk about Lucas Moura. I know people who focus a little more on the English league might remember him as one of the last big prospects that Ferguson was trying to get. And he ended up going to PSG at 19 out of Sao Paulo. He has played, I think his first year was not super great, and he has not been playing a lot this year. But between those years, I mean, Brian, he's looked fairly good, right? I mean, can you tell us a little bit about his performance, what kind of player he is?
He's been pretty good. I mean, he played pretty consistently up until this year when he kind of got, you know, bumped to the side, understandably, by Mbappe and Neymar. The big thing about Lucas Moura is pace. He might be one of the fastest players in all of football. If anybody plays FIFA, he's always one of the fastest players in FIFA. He's always something like 95 or 96 pace and acceleration. Like crazy fast. Excellent on the ball. End product is all right. I don't have X goal numbers or anything like that, or X assists or anything like that. But I would say that his goals and assist numbers benefit a lot by playing for PSG and playing a lot in the league and playing against, you know, some suspect defenses and competition in Ligue 1. He's good at breaking down, beating men off the dribble, and then he can find himself in space, and then his crossing is fine. He's kind of the player we've been looking to get out of League One. He's a much more evolved version of Clinton NG and George Kevin Nkudu.
Much more. Much, much more.
Yeah, like much, much more. Like, still gets capped for Brazil, like, is actually very good. So, I mean, if we were going to sign a player, I would be very much fine with this one.
Ben, you look at a player like Moura, I think one thing that a lot of Spurs fans cry out for when they're watching games is we need someone fast, someone who can sort of break a defense and get behind them. I'm not comparing the players, but that thing that Salah is able to do for Liverpool, where he's so fast, he can break open a defense or get behind one. But we don't really play with wingers, and a lot of our speed and getting up the pitch, we tend to get out of our fullbacks. Does this seem like the kind of player Pochettino would use to you?
Yeah. So, I mean, just to, you know, put his pace in context, in FIFA, he was the 15th fastest player, just ahead of Raheem Sterling and Mohamed Salah, and just behind Jordi Alba and Sadio Mane. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that's completely 100% reliable.
I mean, if you can't trust FIFA...
Who can you
trust?
Yeah. Exactly. But no, I mean, I think we have recognized a need for a, you know, dribbly quick attacker for a long time. Like Brian said, we've gone after Clinton, we've gone after Nkudu, Sissoko, Barkley, all these guys who are nominally, you know, able to dribble and carry the ball that way. And none of them have worked out. So it's something that we so obviously miss in a lot of games, is having that guy who can just, you know, beat a defender one-on-one and open things up for us. And it's something that I think Pochettino desperately wants in the side that we just haven't been able to find yet. Son is probably the closest thing to it that we have right now. Lamella, maybe, when he comes back. You know, we've seen him show some of that. But I think Moura would definitely give us something different than what we have. And that's like the most important thing, I think, at this stage. You know, we have a good first choice attack in Son, Ali, Eriksen, Kane. Trying to buy a guy who's better than them at the things they do really well isn't really the way to do it. I think buying a guy who's really good but slightly different, who gives you rotation options and, you know, kind of the tactical flexibility to, you know, mix and match depending on the opponent, I think that's something that Lucas Moura really gives us, and that's what's going to be so huge if we can actually make this happen. I think we've all seen kind of games where we're crying out for someone with that skill set, and it would be great to have someone that Poch actually trusts who isn't, you know, Marcus Edwards or George Nkudu.
Now, for those who haven't been following it, one of the things currently holding this deal up is, allegedly at least, according to the report, is PSG wants to sell him and Spurs want a loan, which is, you know, probably tells you a little bit that we're hesitant about it. I think that probably speaks to a wage issue, if nothing else.
So yeah, we'll see. It's definitely a wage issue. He's on insane
wages, but he's on more than we'd probably feel comfortable paying for someone with his experience, I'm imagining.
I'm willing to bet he's on six figures, easily.
Jesus, really?
Yeah. And he doesn't have, if my memory, I should have done, preparation for this podcast.
No, Brian, you know what you're in for. You're fine.
But I don't think he has too much time left on his contract. And he basically has already said, I believe after the Nantes game this week, that that he's basically done. Like, that was the last match that he intends to play. He's out of contract next summer. So he's basically got 18 months left on his contract right now.
So is it a bit weird that, I would imagine that part of what he's thinking here is he needs to get minutes so he's on the World Cup team. Now, maybe he's just enough of a nailed-on guy for Brazil that he'll be in that team one way or another, but Spurs might be a good long-term move for Moura, but I have a hard time seeing, if his whole deal is, I need minutes to be ready for the World Cup, I see Spurs using him as a sub, as a rotational player, at least this year.
I think
that doesn't necessarily seem like the right move for him, if that's what he's thinking.
I think it might not be, but I think it's also really easy for a guy making a ton of money at a club like PSG to condescend a little bit towards Tottenham and have a much higher opinion of where he'd stand in that pecking order if he were to come here. So I don't know. I don't know that he's going to look at this club and say, whoa, I can't get in this team. That doesn't seem like the kind of attitude of a player.
It's not even that. It's just if you're him, again, long term, I think this move makes some sense for him. It's just if I'm him and I'm like, I need minutes in the World Cup, I would think even a guy who very much believes in himself doesn't look at Spurs and be like, yeah, fucking Hunming Son, get him out of here. Like, Lucas Moura is here. I don't know. It's just if he needs minutes now, this doesn't seem like the move for him. But like I said, if he's thinking a little more long term, this could work. And probably some of this has to depend on what his standing is in the Brazil squad.
But the teams that can conceivably take him on or that at least have been rumored to be interested in him, it's Spurs and United, which is weird. Apparently United want all the dribbly wingers.
I just think United will always be linked to him. I just think that is
So it's Spurs and United in England, and then it's just some of the other big clubs in France. And I don't think PSG has any interest in selling to, a Marseille or a Lyon or Nice, where I think we're one of the other clubs linked with him. Those moves don't make any sense to me. And the only reason they would make sense is like you said, Greg, is if he really thinks that he just needs starts to get in that Brazil squad. But I think in terms of his visibility, it makes more sense to go to a club like Spurs.
Well, it certainly makes more sense long term. So, like I said, a lot of this probably has to depend on how much he needs to impress people in Brazil. And we don't. I don't know enough about the Brazilian national team to speak to that. So, I don't know. It would be a nice addition to the team. I hope it happens for one reason or another. But who the hell knows? But unfortunately for us, Lucas Moura is the only real impact player it seems like we're being linked with in this window. It does appear that we might be trying to get young. Tottenham have been linked to this kid Madison, James Madison, one of our founding fathers, and apparently also a player on Norwich. And we're starting to see some links coming up about Sessegnon again. Both of these seem to be much more about buy him now, loan him back for the season, and take him in the summer. Ben, you think? What do you think? You think the stuff's happening? You think there's this? Does the smoke mean there's actually fire? I think both of these moves are stuff we'd all be in favor of because we're sort of just taking a shot on these guys. But
so James Madison is a guy that we were linked with back a couple of years ago when he was still at Coventry in League One. And he didn't move to any big club. There are a lot of teams after him. And I think, he has maybe good management. Who told him to go somewhere that he was going to play and develop, and so he went to Norwich. And it seems like a credible link that he is maybe still on our radar and not just, a random rumor about a random young kid, which is nice. But by all accounts, he he looks the business in the championship. He is kind of having a season like Alex Pritchard did in his last year in the championship.
Don't do that.
Before.
Don't bring back those bad memories.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the thing is, you know, Pritchard looked really legit until he got injured, and it kind
Pritchard
of derailed
looked great.
His career.
I'm still a little blown away. We never really gave him a shot, but
yeah, I think it was just a lot of bad timing for him and bad timing with an injury. But you know, he's back in the Premier League now with Huddersfield. Like, I don't think that's a surprise given what he looked like a few years ago. And so, you know, I think Maddison is kind of in that ilk. You know, someone like Dele Alli, someone who could turn out to be a real phenomenal player. He's only just turned 21. You know, I think buying him, camping him at Norwich for the rest of the season and seeing what happens makes a lot of sense. You know, we're going to need a number 10 backup for Christian Eriksen eventually. He can't play forever. Even though for the past like 5 years, he seems to have played every minute of every game. But, you know, the other thing that maybe makes me think this is likely is we just loaned Norwich Marcus Edwards, who, you know, a week ago looked like he was just there to replace Alex Pritchard, who was leaving, but now looks maybe like, you know, we're trying to grease the wheels for this deal with Maddison. I don't know. But so, it's the kind of move we should be making.
Let's talk about that, because I think most of the Sessegnon stuff is like ITK, which frankly I don't differentiate from real news, even though I know it's total garbage. But Spurs have loaned out. Spurs, for a long time, what we heard about Spurs' loan policy was we don't loan out players that we're planning on keeping. We want them here learning to do things the Tottenham way, so when it's ready for them to get minutes, they understand what we expect out of them, and they're ready to do what we need them to do. That really started to, I don't know if it started to change, but we were given the impression it started to change with Josh Onuma going to Villa and Cameron Carter-Vickers going to, was it Sheffield United or Wednesday? I can't remember which.
United.
Okay. That happened earlier in the year. It looks like Onuma is going to stay at Villa for now, or at least we haven't heard anything, but Cameron Carter-Vickers just came back to Spurs. Do you think that, I mean, now Marcus Edwards has gone to Norwich, so that's three guys that it's on some level were touted as having a future at Tottenham that have now been loaned out. It's been hard for me to determine if we've given up on those players or if we think these guys just need game time and there's not enough spots for that at Tottenham, or they're not ready for it yet at Tottenham, and if we want to get them ready, they need, like, you know, the traditional opinion of loans, what we did with Kyle Walker back in the day, and in theory what we did with Harry Kane. I mean, what do you guys, I mean, Brian, do you think these guys have a future at Spurs, or do you think it's just more the same, and like we're putting these guys in the shop window to make some money off of them?
For Carter-Vickers, I think all reports seem to be that he's well liked at the club, that everybody thinks very highly of him, that everybody thinks that he can be an excellent defender for Spurs in the future. I've never seen him play well, and it didn't look like Sheffield United thought very highly of him. Certainly some of their fans weren't too happy or weren't too unhappy to see him leave.
A lot of the Sheffield United fan commentary I saw was he started off really well and then he had some bad games in a row and it's been a confidence issue, but they seem to think roughly positive of him. But
yeah, but I mean, you know, like, I don't know, if he wasn't playing at Sheffield United, then bring him back, and that's fine, I guess. Edwards, I think, is the one that makes more sense as a shop window type play, because, you know, he wasn't even really playing in the under-23s, which is weird. And now he's going to go to a team in the Championship and presumably play? It's a weird kind of path that his career is taking, and I wonder how much of it has to do with, you know, Pochettino kind of questioning his attitude and work ethic, which I believe was definitely in Pochettino's book that came out this fall or winter, so it makes a little sense to me that Edwards would go out and play
somewhere and get senior professional minutes, and then maybe either, you know, develop and decide that he is going to be a professional footballer, or us decide that he can just go somewhere else.
Ben, do you have any optimism for their future at Spurs?
I do. I feel like this seems to be a little different than the loans we've seen in the past. You know, I think Pochettino was right initially to keep guys close to home instead of loaning them out to see what they were able to deliver. But as we have become a better team with a fuller squad, and especially now that we're in the Champions League the past two seasons, it's harder to find minutes for these guys. You know, when Harry Kane was breaking through, we could road test him in the Europa League and see what he was capable of, you know, before we had to commit to giving him minutes in the Premier League. You know, Harry Winks and Onuma in the past couple seasons got a lot more time in, you know, fringe competitions and, you know, even in the league, because we didn't have a super deep squad. And now, you know, we're competing at a much higher level than we were. And it's much harder to make time for a guy like Marcus Edwards on the bench, let alone to make time for him on the pitch. And I think, I'm hoping at least, that this, you know, is part of a new pattern for Pochettino to give these guys a chance out on loan to get them the minutes they need, to give them the opportunity to develop and impress, so that they can come back and be contributors. Because, you know, I think the reality is there's just not a lot of time. You know, we've seen Kyle Walker-Peters get 2-3 games this season, even though, you know, he started the first game of the season against Newcastle, one man in the match, which, yes, was a little generous, but, you know, was still right there with the squad, and we just haven't been able to fit him in. Between Trippier and Aurier, you know, they've got to play. Where are you going to give Kyle Walker-Peters those minutes? And I think, you know, further down the pecking order, it's even harder. So I think the reinstitution of a real loan policy with a view to developing players and not just a shop window, it makes sense in this time and place for the team. And so this may just be me wish casting onto what's happening, but I think that's what it is. But time will tell.
And that's what it certainly makes evaluating these players very difficult. Like, I get very frustrated with the way Tottenham fans talk about Marcus Edwards, Kyle Walker-Peters to a lesser extent, but some of these guys where it's like we're working off of either very little information or no information. Like, I mean, the amount of Tottenham fans who have seen, you know, Marcus Edwards play real minutes is like, I mean, it's probably less than 100. Like, it's not a lot of people. And, you know, there's people like genuinely mad that we weren't giving that guy like minutes in an FA Cup match. Now, I think there is reasons to be mad about the way we selected that, but it's just, you know, it's going to be hard for a guy like Marcus Edwards to break through out of nothing to this team. I mean, I guess Harry Winks did it, but I mean, it felt like he'd been floating around our first team practices for much longer. So I don't know, not everyone's going to be Harry Winks, where the opportunities and injuries kind of open up a spot where he can grow into the team. And then, you know, you look at Onuma, who did get those opportunities and he just couldn't take advantage of it. So like you said, Ben, I hope these loan deals are for real, and I hope we're going to see, you know, real progress because of that with these players. Real quick, do you think Cameron Carter-Vickers is going to play any kind of any role for the team for the rest of the season?
I think he's got to get loaned back out, right?
I mean,
I don't know.
I can't see him getting real minutes for us. Maybe if we draw another, you know, maybe against Newport County, we'll throw him in just to make up space. But, you know, with Foyth, I imagine Foyth would get those minutes first, right?
Right, and with Toby coming back, it seems like and us switching to a back four instead of a back three, it seems like there's even fewer minutes for a center back. So, I don't know. I don't expect to see Cameron Carter-Vickers in the team this year.
I mean, maybe he'll get loaned to Atlanta.
That'd be dope.
You think he's good enough for Atlanta, Ben?
No.
Oh, okay. Sure.
But, you know, Anton Walks wasn't either, and it was still really fun to have him.
Okay, well, let's take a minute right here. I just want to take stock of where Spurs are in general right now. We're 3 points out of fourth place. We are within spitting distance of basically everyone but Manchester City right now. We could be, you know, we're not far out of second. We'd be tied for fourth if Liverpool hadn't beaten City this weekend. I mean, we're in a pretty good place, I feel like. But at the same time, it looks like everybody above us is reloading. Liverpool have Van Dijk. They also... who did they just get? I totally had a brain fart. Liverpool just got somebody else.
Well, they didn't get Naby Keita.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'm thinking of. They didn't get Naby Keita, but Liverpool look like they're firing on all cylinders right now. But we all know how ethereal that can be for Liverpool. Arsenal are apparently about to swap Alexis Sanchez with United for Mkhitaryan, which, I mean, I can't imagine that wouldn't help Arsenal on some level, just by virtue of Mkhitaryan would in theory be happy to be there.
Probably not.
United's about to get Alexis.
It doesn't sound like anybody's happy to be there.
Yeah, that's a good point. United's about to get Alexis. I mean, how are you guys feeling about the top four race? All these teams above us are maybe kind of adding players, and like I said, maybe we'll get Lucas Moura, but I'm skeptical. I don't know. Like, it seems like every week one team looks like they're going to be unbeatable, including us, and then the next week they drop points to, like, Watford or something.
I feel fine about it, though. Like, you know, okay, so City is probably uncatchable, and if anybody is going to catch them, it's maybe not us. And, you know, Liverpool are looking good. They may be improved, but, you know, they have their own issues with, you know, defending. Manchester United are boring as hell, can't score goals. Chelsea are weird.
But United's about to get Alexis, because that's what they need,
I'm not convinced Alexis fixes all their problems. And then he adds a whole new set of problems, which, you know, what do you now do with Rashford and Martial and, you know, Lingard and, you know, all those players who were actually playing all right? You know, Chelsea seem to be weirdly broken, but also kind of managing to get points still. Arsenal, I'm really not worried about. I'm probably going to regret saying that. You know, I'm pretty confident in Spurs' ability to be better than two of those teams. You know, if I had to go out on a limb today and say, I think we would finish ahead of Chelsea and Arsenal, which would be great. But yeah, I'm pretty confident of top four.
Ben?
I don't know. I mean, I would have said a week ago that, you know, Liverpool and Arsenal were the most likely to miss out while we finished ahead of them. And then Liverpool whipped the shit out of Man City, even without Coutinho. And now I'm not sure about anything.
Liverpool almost also gave that game away.
It did, but, I mean,
they did. It's still really impressive. I'm not trying to take that away from them, but the problems are also on display there.
Right. I mean, they still have a bad defense. They still are vulnerable, for sure. But their attack is ridiculous. And, you know, I mean, Man City are also a team that are vulnerable at the back with a great attack. And look what happened to them.
Ben, you haven't really brought up the game changer. I think Theo Walcott's going to Everton, so.
You're right. That's another reason we're going to miss out on top four.
The title contenders are back on track.
I mean, you know, if you were an England fan 15 years ago and you saw a lineup of Theo Walcott, Aaron Lennon, and Wayne Rooney, you'd have been, you know, a little disappointed. But now, I mean, they're ready. Nothing against Aaron Lennon, who's wonderful. But, yeah, boy. Everton, what a fucking stupid ass club.
It makes you appreciate Tottenham, honestly. Like,
especially because when we, like, around the time we were all becoming fans, we were pretty much on the same level as Everton.
Yes, like, we probably had the advantage of being in London, and in retrospect, our ownership was a lot more stable and rich than Everton's. But yes, you're absolutely right. Everton was very, very, very well placed to crack through the top four.
I mean, you guys kind of came in, I get, or well, Greg anyway, you came in around the Champions League season, but prior to that, Everton had been in the Champions League more recently than we had been, which is to say we'd never been in it, but, you know.
Yeah. So, but anyway, back to the top four race, you know, Sanchez is going to be helpful for United, even though he doesn't actually fix their problems. I have no idea. I think it's a total fucking crapshoot. You know, maybe Chelsea are melting down. Maybe Chelsea are just perfectly fine. I don't know.
I just, I'm with you, Ben. Like, I feel like I had a much, I feel like I had a much better handle on it before all these players started playing musical chairs. And, like, it's just gonna, I don't know what Arsenal and Mkhitaryan looks like. I don't know what, you know, I mean, although I think somebody, I can't remember.
I mean, Arsenal with Mkhitaryan still doesn't have a functional defense or midfield.
You're right. But that hasn't stopped them in years past from making the top four. So, I mean, you know, it's so. Someone made a good point on Twitter. I can't remember who, so call me out on this if you said it, and I'll give you credit. But it was like, you know, Arsenal had two of the best playmakers in the world over the last, like, 5 years on their team, and they still couldn't find a way to make it work. Like, why are we worried about Arsenal right now until they make major changes at the top of their organization? They're, you know, it doesn't matter if they get Mkhitaryan. He's not as good as Alexis. It's, you know, but at the same time, like, Alexis going to United, that's, you know, it's not like United need another dribbly attacker, but, you know, Alexis is really fucking good. And,
well, and I mean, the thing is like, we're having this discussion right now, and February is such a huge month for Spurs.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got the Champions League with Juventus, and then we've also got, I believe, United, Liverpool, and Arsenal that month. I think that's right.
Yep.
You know, I mean, that's the way that February goes is kind of make or break for top four, really.
Great.
Yeah,
no pressure.
Right? Yeah, no pressure. But I mean, we had kind of that stretch last year, you know, where we'd drawn all those games in October and November when Harry Kane was out, and then we kind of had this weird stretch. I want to say it was like late January, early February as well. Or maybe, no, actually it was probably late December, early January, where we just had a ton of a run of fairly tough games. And we took like we took 11 out of a pot. No, that can't be right. But we won most of them. And it really gave us momentum for the rest of the season. And so, like, if we come out of that, you know, 3-game stretch in the league with 7 points.
Well, we did that in November, and it didn't really do us a whole lot of good. Or in October, November. You know, we made it through a really tough stretch of games, and then we blew a bunch of points against really stupid teams.
Yay.
Nothing matters, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's going to be a dogfight, and I just feel like all these sort of player acquisitions, like, I think Liverpool still have a comical defense, but putting Van Dijk in there isn't going to hurt things. I don't think it's going to help things 75 million, but, you know, it's 75 million worth, but, you know, it's not going to hurt. So, we're gonna get Toby back. He's like a new player. That'll help. All right, so let's answer a few questions before we wrap it up. Unfit for Purpose wants to know: are we good or bad at transfers, Ben?
Shockingly bad. Next.
Yep.
If only Michael was here to put the mustard on that one.
He's asking that question because, as we all know by now, we missed out on Ross Barkley despite putting, you know, so much effort and so much groundwork to make that transfer happen and then didn't. I'm sure that's what he's getting at.
Talking about Boss Barkley?
Boss Barkley himself.
What if it was all an elaborate game to get Chelsea to spend money on, like, what if the Fernando Llorente
transfer... Well, then we're also bad at that, too.
No, but what if the Fernando Llorente transfer and the interest in Ross Barkley was all just part of, like, a long con to get them to sign Ross Barkley and Andy Carroll? Not that it matters for a team like Chelsea, but...
I mean, we still ended up with Fernando Llorente, and Ross Barkley would have actually made us better because it would have meant we didn't have to play Zoko ever. He's less bad. Zoko.
But in answer to his question, I guess, we're good at signing defenders. We're not very good at signing attackers, though.
It's worth pointing out how good Davinson Sanchez has been this year. And I know it's not like he was a bargain, but he's been very good. It's like what Ryan said when he was on our podcast early in the season. Every year, he steps up to a level that's probably a little, like, everyone expects to be a little bit much for him at that moment in time. And he, you know, he rises to the occasion, and he's done that with Spurs this year. I've been very happy with Sanchez. So, yeah, we could buy defenders and nothing else.
And it is crazy that we're in a situation where Sanchez has been maybe one of the players of the season is going to find himself out of the team in like a month or a couple weeks. Anyway.
Yeah, or we're going to rejigger the team to accommodate him. I mean, he's been really good for us this year. It's been wild to watch. Certainly money well spent.
The thing about him is he hasn't been like noticeably good or bad, really. I guess I would say I wouldn't say that he's been like spectacularly good in the way that,
I mean,
like,
I think some of his degree of difficulty. I mean, maybe you shouldn't ascribe that to a $41 million player, but like certainly for what he was coming in here with, I think he is certainly sure. Met and exceeded expectations.
Sure, but like the thing that I keep equating him to is like when we signed Alderweireld, and you just watched Alderweireld, and you were like, "Holy shit, this guy is the best defender in the league," and obviously that wasn't the expectation on Davinson, but Davinson has just been good. Like, he's been fine. Like, I can't think of a game where I can't remember a game where I watched it and was like, "God, this guy, this is the problem with our team." And I can't also recall a game where I watched and was like, "Oh my god, he's amazing." He's just been fine. He's been good. Like,
but I think, you know, as Kaylee would point out, like the problem with our transfers is it's all just, it doesn't seem like we've got an approach. It's like very hodgepodgey, and we just kind of got lucky that, you know, I think it was Sanchez's agent, or Poch had a friend who was connected to Sanchez, and it's just like, you know, we got kind of lucky. It doesn't seem like there's a structural approach here. Which is what's annoying, because like we could use another midfielder, or we could use, yeah, you know, a couple different things. And I feel like a moderately, you know, if we had a scouting department or a, you know, sort of a chief of player acquisitions, these are things that could have been addressed, but they haven't been. And I don't know why. I don't know. I mean, certainly building that kind of structure feels like the kind of thing Daniel Levy would do, but for whatever reason, we've just never really been successful at doing that. And that is,
yeah, I mean,
the kind of thing I'd love to know why.
Yeah, why would we as a club with less resources than our competitors, you know, try to have a structure and a setup that would, you know, exploit inefficiencies in the market? And
but, like, you know, every time you read an interview just about how Spurs operate, like, our chief financial officer was interviewed for some, it was making its way around Spurs Twitter. He was interviewed for some finance magazine a while ago, and he was, like, talking about his approach to things, and it's like, yeah, no, that sounds like the kind of things Levy does, where it's like very regimented, very structured, you know, very like, you know, ambitious, and it's just sort of like it permeates every aspect of Tottenham except our player acquisition, and it's bizarre. I don't know if that's because Levy just has too much ownership of that and doesn't want to get like cede authority, or if it's a Pochettino thing with not wanting to cede authority. I don't know. It's all very weird. So bad, but we succeed in spite of ourselves. How about that?
Yep, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Our next question, our last question of the night, because we are running a bit long, comes from Opus Gozny on Twitter. I'm sorry, I'm getting that name wrong. He's very nice and retweets a lot of my stuff, so I should probably know that. But anyway, he wants to know, I think this is a very important question, why don't we have a sleeve sponsor yet? And what kind of sleeve sponsor should we have? I am genuinely shocked that Tottenham don't have a sleeve sponsor, considering I think every other top six club has one, and given Daniel Levy's reputation, I'm just surprised we're leaving that kind of money on the table. You know, Everton have Angry Birds and don't get nearly enough shit for it. Angry Birds, who presented Aaron Lennon, by the way, today, so good for them.
Theo Walcott.
Are you really?
I'm so sorry. Really? I'm so sorry. I'm gonna go walk into the East River. Wow. I can't believe I did that. Oh.
Wow.
Do you want to go back and edit that?
No. I'm not a coward. I'm gonna leave my flaws in there for people to see. This is what that blockchain life is all about.
Is it?
No, it's not. Ben, why don't we have a sleeve sponsor? Who do you want to see on Tottenham's sleeve?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, I think Daniel Levy is just a classy guy who doesn't want to tacky up the club and our jerseys with a sponsor that doesn't mesh with the aesthetic sensibilities of the kit design. You know, I mean, like the way that red AIA smoothly integrates with everything we've done in our club's history. It's, you know, you don't want to sell you that by just like throwing out and, you know, sponsors willy nilly. So I respect how tastefully he's handled the situation.
Well, so I think, Brian, what do you think of our sleeve sponsor situation?
I mean, I'm fine with us not having one. But if you want me to actually answer his question, I don't care.
So I think Ben hit the nail on the head here. I think, you know, the important thing about a sleeve sponsor, which I don't think anyone's really pulled off yet, is it needs to be classy and it needs to really fit the ethos of a club. So I think we should have our sleeve sponsored by Dimitar Berbatov, and it should just be a picture of his face wearing sunglasses, like, on our sleeve at all times. I think that is a sleeve sponsor that Tottenham need.
I think the problem with that is...
take a new selfie every week.
See, that would be even better. It could be interactive. There could be selfies with fans that you could auction off, and that would be on there. I'd be fine with that. There'd be a little, you know, I don't know if you're if that capitalist approach would mesh with your sensibilities, Ben, but it's Burbs, so I could live with it.
I just don't know how much, if Berbatov would be willing to pay what's necessary to get on the Spurs sleeve, though.
I think we got to make it happen. We got to make it happen. I'm confident there is an agreement to be reached.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what you lose in you know, sponsorship dollars, you gain in kit sales, because everybody's going to have to buy a new shirt every week to get the new Berbatov selfie. And it just pays for itself, you know.
I mean, another thing is like, but he's Bulgarian, right? So, I mean, it's not exactly like a desirable market, you know.
People interested in Dimitar Berbatov is a desirable market.
Yeah, I mean, he's a global phenomenon.
Yeah, he really is.
People interested in Dimitar Berbatov is pretty much limited to just, like, us and our listeners.
No. Dimitar Berbatov's genuine brand is, like, what Zlatan will never be able to achieve until the day he dies with his weird photoshops. Like, it is a global brand that is ripe for exploitation.
Yeah, I mean, he transcends international boundaries. He transcends... you know, any lines you can put between people. Dimitar Berbatov is what brings us all together.
He is the apotheosis of cool.
No, I'm not having this. I'm not on board with this.
Brian Ashlock opposed to Dimitar Berbatov.
That's not what I said.
No. That is what you're saying. There are words coming out of your mouth, and there is malice coming out of your heart.
It's true.
Yeah, this is unconscionable.
Well, we're going to put Angry Birds on your sleeve, Brian.
Well, we can just do like... well, let's just do like the Red Dead Redemption 2 logo. Because I'm sure it's also red. And then we could have both the word red and the color red. And then, I don't know, this is very dumb. How did this question make it through our filter?
Yes, how did a dumb question make it through the Wheeler Dealer Radio filter? Great point. We must be out of practice. That must be what it is.
We used up all the good jokes at the beginning.
It's about blockchains, man. That's our new bit, Wheeler Dealer Blockchain.
All right, now that we've had all these tedious jokes out of the way, can we finally have the earnest conversation about formations that we've been saving?
Oh, man, look at the time. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up. Ben, thank you for joining us tonight. What cryptocurrency will you be using this week?
You can buy my root beer coins on Twitter at Gary Root Beer. And right now, an eighth of a root beer is $15,000. But if you use our special Wheeler Dealer Radio promo code, you can get it for cheaper. So, you know, inquiries welcome.
Do you own Stevenage now?
I mean, I don't own Stevenage. That's not really how this works. You know, I have Stevenage in a wallet online that, you know, I can access as needed. You know, I have a 4,700 digit code that I have to type in every time I want to access it to buy a new player. You know, if I lose it, you know, anybody could maybe own Stevenage, but you know, for now, you know, I'll say tentatively yes.
Okay. Okay. Somehow this is going to end with you getting like a shipment of like ketamine, right?
God, cryptocurrency's dumb.
Brian, where could people buy your cryptocurrency this week?
I mean, you can't really buy it so much. I mean, you have to. It's not mining, really. It's more like you have to pen for my crypto. Like, you know, you have to go down to the internet and you have to filter it through like a little screen, and then my, you know, rainbow coins, Brett Rainbow coins, they get into the pan because they're, you know, thicker than the rest of the regular internet. And I don't know. This is all very stupid. Yeah,
Oh, now it's a problem. All of a sudden, it's a problem on this podcast to be stupid.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was fine with jokes about Kevin Vimmer being shaped like a barrel or jokes about Eric Dyer being afraid of fire, but these cryptocurrency jokes are beyond the pale.
Well, you can find my cryptocurrency. I will be selling it at skipjack0079 on Twitter, and I am taking advantage of all of my original great ideas that are lighting Twitter on fire with DeskCoin, that is, you know, really just taking advantage of the, you know, the hottest new trend that surrounds Tottenham Hotspur's attacking coin. So if you want to get DeskCoin, get it from the only source online, which is me at skipjack0079. I hear his currency is blowing up. I expect you'll be able to buy several, I don't know, lots of ketamine with it. I don't know what else you find with cryptocurrency other than shady, like, medications. So
it's very useful for Silk Road. So, yeah.
There you go. Well, if no one else has any more blockchains or cryptocurrency to discuss, I think that's it, guys. So on behalf of Ben, on behalf of Brian, and on behalf of Michael, who I assume is still sitting on an L train somewhere, I'm your host, Greg. Thank you very much. Welcome back, and come on, you Spurs.